Okay, so just a brief recapitulation. First verse, may I cherish, I always cherish all beings with the resolve to accomplish for them the highest good that is more precious than any wish-fulfilling gem. So it's a basic statement, the basic aspiration. Cherishing in the sense of overcoming, or rather extending oneself, cherishing to include others. Trying to recognize others as beings seeking their own fulfillment, and resolving to try to help them to accomplish their highest good. Then, whenever I'm in the company of others, may I regard myself as inferior to all, and from the depths of my heart, cherish others as supreme. So in all situations, in all social situations, putting others first, putting them above oneself, serving them. But the words are actually cherish others as supreme. So it's the cherish has such a sort of a tender sort of connotation, really seeing others' needs and responding to them. In all my actions, may I watch my mind, and as soon as disturbing emotions arise, may I forcefully stop them at once, since they will hurt both me and others. So watching your mind, sensing that this disturbance that unsettles, which is a sign that a klesha is forming, this knot of attitude, emotion and will, trying to get in contact with the underlying Vedana feeling and trying to see what that Vedana represents, what unsatisfaction lies behind it, what urges, what instincts, what needs, what values are not being fulfilled. Because if you don't, then the klesha will lead you to act in a way that will certainly hurt you, both now and in the future, because of the actions of karma, and will probably lead you to hurt others. Then these three verses, which are about using the unpleasant and difficult experiences that other people can engender as opportunities for self-transcendence. And they test your desire to cherish others. It's easy to have metta for somebody who loves you, but it's much more difficult. Well, actually, it's not that easy in some cases, but it's much more difficult to have metta for those who harm you, who wrong you, and who are just unpleasant. So when I see ill-natured people overwhelmed by wrong deeds and pain, may I cherish them as something rare, as though I had found a treasure trove. So when you see people who are just unpleasant company, who are full of unskillfulness and unwholesome mental states, all, of course, based upon pain and suffering. Their presence is unpleasant to you, particularly if you're sensitive, particularly if you've sensitized yourself through spiritual practice. So you need to try to have a healthy response rather than a response of trying to reject and push away, or a response of contempt. And you try to see them as a rare opportunity, an opportunity for genuine self-transcendence. And you therefore cherish them as providing that opportunity. Then when someone out of envy does me wrong by insulting me and the like, may I accept defeat and offer victory to them. Yes, when that harm is, that unpleasantness is actually directed at you, and the context here is of envy, which I suggested is to do with those sort of competitive frictions that so often run through our social relations. But instead of thinking in terms of getting your own back, restoring your position, you think in terms of just accepting the defeat, the apparent defeat, and letting them have the victory. And then finally, if someone whom I have helped and in whom I have placed my hopes does great wrong by harming me, may I see them as an excellent spiritual friend. So I talked about this as dealing with betrayal, that experience of people letting you down in one way or another, whether it's romantically or in terms of friendship or in spiritual terms. I think betrayal is a very strong part of the experience of Sangha. And I found this quite interesting, that the way in which people become disillusioned with spiritual life as a result of what they conceive to be being let down by members of the spiritual community. It's because of that, my experience of people beginning to feel disillusioned in India, that I decided to study this text, because I thought that the only way you can deal with that sort of disillusionment is a creative one, is a transcendent one, if you see what I mean. If you simply ask for the spiritual community to be perfect and then you'll belong to it, well, disillusionment is not going to be slow in coming. If you ask for your teachers to be perfect, disillusionment is not slow in coming.